Anyways, I'll just start off by just I was just thinking earlier that it's the Waysak month, and it's the time where we reflect upon, think about, appreciate the person who's behind me, the Buddha. And he was the one that started all of this. Yeah. So it's just a nice time to just reflect on how it all began. And one of the things that comes to mind was, as a young man, the Buddha was searching for something. Is sometimes when we're coming here, we're searching for something. And that's what he did as well. As I have a very sketchy memory of the story of the Buddha, but what I understood and what I remember was that he went to different teachers in the time of the Buddha. So he went to see this master, and he learned from the master, and he mastered the master's teachings, but he wasn't satisfied, or it didn't enlighten him. And then he went on to another teacher, and the same thing happened. So the Buddha was just looking for certain answers to his life. And the way he found it was just through the practice of meditation. Just being able to meditate, to go into a deep state. So when he arose from the deep state, he had a mind which was like, super crystal clear, that it was able to understand life for what it is. And I think that's like, when you think about it, when we're meditating for the last half an hour, and sometimes the idea of the meditation is to kind of wake up a little bit, yeah? Trying to become more aware, trying to be more alert, trying to understand what is going on around you. But the Buddha meditated to the point where his mind was just so bright, so aware, and so alert that he was able to understand the world in a certain way. He understood the world in a certain way, and he taught that. And his teachings has been carried to this day. And yeah, I mean, in a sense, like, the teachings is theoretical. But at the same time, there's also like a practical part to it. And you can see that in the monastic community. We have monks, we have nuns, and we're basically living we're living Buddhism to its fullest potential. Yeah? And in the same way, as lay practitioners, you can do the same thing. So, yes, on one side there is the theory, and on the other side there's the practical side of it. And the practical side of it is these things that you just cultivate over time throughout your day on a daily basis. And it's meant to give you something, yeah? We come here, we want something. You want a bit of wisdom, you want answers from the monks, you want words that will take away your suffering, words that will make you enlightened. You come here for something. And in my time as a monk, I've heard a lot of Dhamma talks. And I've heard a lot of Dhamma talks. I've sat through many sutta classes, and the teachings and the words can only do so much. Yeah. And then It only can do so much. So what you do as a Buddhist or as a practitioner, you want to be able to do things. You want to be able to add things to your life on a daily basis, and you wanted to be able to build these things up over time. And yeah, so it has to start from somewhere. And I remember when I first decided to become a Buddhist, and I remember that was a time when I decided that I had to make some changes to my life. And you know, I was a certain way before that. You know, you grow up, you're not a very virtuous person. You know, you're not very kind to your family or your parents. You're not keeping the five precepts. You know, you're drinking alcohol, you're going out having fun. You know, you're doing stuff like you're going fishing and killing animals, and you don't really have, I didn't really have like a direction in life. And as any human being, I had my own sufferings. Yeah. So for some reason, I just turned to Buddhism. And then through Buddhism, what I understood is that for a person who wants to continue on, then we have to make certain changes to our lives. And there's so many aspects of the Buddhist teachings that we can make use of. And one of the things that I was talking about earlier in the meditation was the idea of being able to live more presently, to be able to be more mindful of the present moment, to be able to live in the here and now. And this idea of mindfulness, I think, is very useful because it helps you take away your mind from all the thinking that we have as human beings. And I think we all understand that this thinking mind of ours is the cause of suffering. And, you know, when I live my life and just be around the people that I'm around and just experiencing life for, you know, what it is, just having interactions with other human beings, you know, what I found is like the humans, we think too much. So this one little exercise that helps us, you know, take our minds away from our thinking is to be mindful. To be mindful of the things that you do on a daily basis. And I think Ajahn Brahm talks about when you're brushing your teeth, instead of using your good hand, you use your other hand. Because that stimulates the mind and makes it focus more, so you're able to brush your teeth with the opposite hand. And I remember just growing up, and I was actually coming to an end of my apprenticeship as a chef, and during that time I was just having these just like unskillful thoughts that would arise in the mind. And I'm sure, you know, you people have the same thing. You might get to, like, in your life, you might have times where you have these obsessive thoughts. Yeah? You just think about one thing or a couple of things, but they just replay in your mind over and over and over again. And you haven't heard of any useful tips to help you kind of overcome those obsessive thoughts. So I think when I was younger, I was just going through this phase in my life. And I just had these thoughts that I did not want in my mind. And I think that's also another point that you should know, is you should be able to distinguish what thoughts are going to be helpful for you and what thoughts aren't. Yeah. And we all know that through just our body and our mind. Yeah. We know that things are unpleasant. We're feeling down, or, you know, things are hurting us, or we're unhappy. We kind of know that that's unpleasant. And then when we feel good, like, you know, you get a discount when you go shopping. or if you like kids, you're one of your brothers or sisters, they have a baby, you go see their kids, and you feel joy just being around kids. So you know within your own mind and with your own heart what makes you feel good and what doesn't. So as I was going through this phase, like a weird phase in my life, everybody has their weird phases, and some people are still weird. Anyways, and so I just remember I was just working in the kitchen, yeah, and I would use the knife. Use a knife and I would like cut up vegetables. Sounds kind of boring. But I was able to use that kind of situation to take away my mind from those obsessive thoughts. And I was actually lucky enough or mindful enough to see how the process would happen. Because I remember, yeah, I was actually quite, I'm just remembering now, I was actually quite obsessed with this thought. It was actually causing me a lot of trouble. But for us, I remember going to a cinema, and it wasn't about Buddhism. It was, I don't know, back in those days, maybe 20 years ago, you might hear something from a friend or whatever, and then you end up going to the Perth Entertainment Centre. You pay like $30 and you go in, and there's this guy who's talking about spiritual stuff and, you know, guru, and giving you this life advice. And I think the one message that I got from it was to be mindful, and somehow that would help in some sort of way. And to me, that kind of like made sense, because it's something that I could actually do and experience in the present moment. Is to be mindful and just to like feel what's in your body. You know, you can feel the sensations in your hands, and just, you know, just being mindful and just being able to take your mind away from those obsessive thoughts. So what you see is, like, you might have some sort of thought coming up in your mind, but you have the ability to just refocus the mind and just put it on the task at hand. Yeah, and then, okay, oh, it was like, wow, you know, my mind actually went away from that obsessive thought for a few seconds. And then, yeah, you know the nature of the mind. It doesn't listen to you. So then it'll start thinking again. But don't give up, you know. Just persist, keep going. And then you remember, okay, I want to get rid of these obsessive thoughts. I'll just be mindful again. So you just keep on doing that. And you just repeat the process. Put on repeat. And then you'll gradually start to see the changes in the mind. You start to see over time that obsessive thought isn't there anymore. It's not in the mind anymore. It's disappeared. And I think that's one of the things that I've experienced. I'm sure you've all experienced that over time. It's this idea of like letting go. And the idea of like feeding, like if you feed the mind whatever it wants. It will just keep on going and going and going. And that's with life and that's with meditation. And, you know, some of the similes that teachers have taught before was the example of like a bonfire. You get this big bonfire, it's burning, it's hot. And sometimes that's like the mind. It's just overcome with, I don't know, whatever things are going on in your life at that particular time. And, you know, as human beings, we feed that fire. We throw logs onto it. And you can see, like, how people feed that fire. You know, they might read something on the news and they get upset about it. You know, you get upset about it, you get grumpy about it. You're just feeding that fire. And it's just like a cycle that never stops. And it actually gets worse as you get older. I wouldn't say worse as you get older, but it becomes like a characteristic that you carry into your older age. And that's one thing that, you know, that I kind of I've heard in my monastic life and that I reflect upon quite a bit is, you know, what am I going to carry into my later years? Yeah. And sometimes it's like, you know, you see, I don't want to like find fault with the elderly here. But it's just like a lesson for like you youngsters, you know. You've seen the people around you, you see how they grow. And, you know, you can end up like that. Yeah. So it's like a wise reflection. And you can see, like, you know, once you develop these characteristics into, like, later in life, they're very difficult to change. So, yeah, for you youngsters out there, you know, now is the time to put these teachings into practice. And, yeah, I don't know what you want to get from this Buddhism. And, yeah, there's, like, I think a lot of things that you can get from it. So, yeah, one thing is to be mindful, to be present, to just try to add that into your life. And it's always good to always come back to listen to the teachings, because these things remind you of what to do. So coming here on the Friday night, or just listening to talks, you know, when you're at home, these are good reminders for us, because if we don't get these reminders, then we forget how to practice. We forget about the practice. So these little things can add value to our lives. And today I was just like getting ready to come out for the meal. And you know, we have a little place in Volley Stone, and people go there every day to feed us. And like I'm just talking to you about tonight, is just doing these little things to add value, to add a little bit more happiness to your life. And just seeing the people that look after us over time. I don't know if you guys and girls understand how monks live, but we need support from our lay community to be able to live life as a monastic. So one of the things that the monks or the nuns cannot do is we cannot go shopping for food or cook for ourselves. So in that sense, we are dependent on the kindness of the lay people that go to the monastery every day to feed the monks or to feed the nuns. And, you know, with life, sometimes you just see things so often that you take them for granted, in a sense. So today, I sort of like just changed my perceptions a little bit and just decided to have a sense of appreciation for the people looking after me and the monks in the community. And I think going through life as human beings, we too can have developed that sense of appreciation for the people around us, for our mothers, for our fathers, for our friends, or whoever. Just try that. And I tried it today, just having this sense of appreciation towards the people that looked after me. And it gave me a little bit of a boost of happiness. Yeah. So just try that. Everybody here got somebody to be appreciative of. And I've seen you know the scenario of the grandmother. The grandmother who's looking after the grandkids. And she comes to the temple and she tells you these stories about how much time and how much energy and all the time that she spends looking after the grandchildren. Not even the grandchildren, but the children themselves, even though they're adults. And that's all very nice. But I think, I don't know, if I was a child, I would try to show a sense of appreciation for what that person is doing for me. Yeah. And these things just, I think, they soften up the heart. Yeah. You know, your heart becomes soft. I think when your heart becomes soft, you can be more relaxed. You know, you can actually relax and just chill out and just be in a headspace where there are no worries. You're not too worried about things. You're just living life as it is. And yeah, it's a nice way to walk through life. To walk through life without any worries. And you can still get stuff done. It doesn't mean that you don't think about anything. But you live with like an essence where you don't worry too much. Yeah. I think the less you worry, you know, the more peaceful and the more relaxed you can feel. And that just comes from just doing these little practices every day. Just being kind to one another. Yeah. I think you don't have to be kind all the time. That's like unrealistic. But it's like, what is it? What does it mean to be kind? Yeah. What does it mean to be like easygoing? And I think these kinds of attitudes, like to be kind and to be easygoing, these are helpful attitudes that can add like happiness and, you know, just contentment to one's life. And being kind and being easy to get along with, I think one of the the main things that you see is this ability to go with the flow. I just love this. It's like the monks that I grow up with, and the monks that I like living with, are the monks who are able to go with the flow. Yeah. So, hey, what are you doing this afternoon? Do you want to go for a cup of coffee? I'm just joking. Of course they do. They're just going with the flow. just imagine that. Just having that attitude of just being able to just go with the flow. Yeah. It's like, and I think just being able to like go with the flow, you can also, it just adds that little bit of more happiness to your life, I think. Yeah, I think when I was growing up as a monk, I was one of those monks that would just go with the flow. So Ajahn Brahm's like, Ajahn Brahm's like, Santudi, can you do this? I'll be like, yes. I'll be like, yes. But I'll be happy to do it. I wouldn't be complaining or, you know. And I was just being able to go with the flow. Yeah. And then Ajahn would be like, Ajahn Santudi, can you go teach in Dhammaloka? I'll be like, ooh. I'll be like, yeah, okay, I'll just go with the flow. And just going with the flow makes Ajahn Brahm's life easier. So I'm helping him out. So when I want my, you know, electric ute, I can ask him to get me one. No. And he's just this idea of just going with the flow. I think it's a very lovely idea. I'm just trying to think about examples that I can share with you. And you know, like, the people in your lives, your best friends, the ones that you like to hang out with, what are they like? What characteristics do they have? I think one of the characteristics is that they're able to be able to go with your flow. And that's something that I think as human beings, we can adopt that attitude as well. And like I said, it's not something that you have to do 24/7 in your life, but it's something you can adopt into your life. Because at the end of the day, in Buddhism, we talk about balance. We talk about the middle way. Yeah. Like when the Buddha became enlightened, his first sermon was the sermon about the middle way. Yeah. So there's always a little bit of a balance. And I think, like, for this example, like I was talking about just going with the flow and just helping people out, if you take it too far, then you can just burn yourself out. Yeah. So on the other side, we have this lovely tradition in Buddhism called being in seclusion. And like for yourselves, I think it's sort of like just having me time. Yeah. Just being able to balance out by giving yourself some me time. So in a monastic setting, you know, we serve the community, we build, we make coffee and share with other monks. Instant coffee, of course. And then, so there's like a balance there. Yeah, like a balance. And It's like bit of seclusion and just being able to just recharge your batteries. That's what the seclusion or just being alone allows you to be able to do that. So you can just recharge those batteries, you know, get a good rest, get your mind in a good place. When you're recharged, you'll be more effective, more useful to the people around you. Yeah. Just like this idea of meditation, you know, as you travel through the mind when you're practicing, this idea of just being able to recharge your mind when you're meditating, just bringing up those energy levels in the mind. And those, like if you, Ajahn Brahm always says, you know, those energy levels are the ones that, you know, equates to happiness. And we all know that, right? When we're working too hard, you know, at the end of the day, we easily get grumpy. Yes. And if you work too hard for too long, you burn yourself out. And that's not very nice. You just burn yourself out. And yeah. So it's also nice to understand that if we can just take time away for ourselves to just recharge the mind, then yeah, we're finding that balance. We're finding that middle way. And you know, life goes on. Life goes on. Yeah. And we just, you know, we're just doing our best as you know, practitioners, doing our best through understanding the, you know, the word of the Buddha and just putting it into practice. And yeah, we can only do what we can do. You know, we come to this, you know, we come here with our own character and our own like habits of mind. And yeah, we're just working with it and we're just doing our best. And I think, you know, just not expecting too much from oneself is kind of helpful as well. We just don't want to be too hard on ourselves when we're trying to make some sort of changes to our life. And just, you know, when you look at what the monks are doing here, we ordain to become monks to kind of reach the highest goal of like becoming enlightened. Or even some of you people as well, you've come here to, you know, you actually want to become enlightened. And I've been doing this for a long time. And you get to the point where you're just, you know, content. You're content, but not fully content with your practice, because you know that you still got to put a little bit of effort in to make the progresses that you need to make along the path. And just having the understanding that we don't need to put that pressure on ourselves, and that we're just trying our best at becoming better people. Then, you know, I think that's enough. I think that's enough. Yeah. And you just see where your path takes you. And I'm listening. Sometimes I just like listen to some Dhamma, and you know, the idea that kind of comes into my mind is that people, when they listen to a Dhamma talk, they just want some sort of like solution to a problem. Yeah. And when I've just growing up in this monastic life and listening to Ajahn Brahm, it's just the Dhamma talks are there to just give you a different perspective, a different way of looking at life. Yeah. You just take it one step at a time. And you steadily grow as you move along the path. And you can just understand that just creating wholesome states of mind, just adding goodness to your life on a daily basis, these things grow. They grow and they encompass your life over time. And you can just see the opposite. You can see the opposite happening. You know, if you're the type of person that just develops unwholesome states of mind, and you just keep on developing those unwholesome states of mind throughout your life, and that's not a very nice place to put your head in as you're living life. Yeah. So these are the, you know, these. It's like, you know, this idea of growth. And the Buddha talks about it in a way where when we develop these wholesome states of mind, they just keep on getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And he spoke about it in a way where this is how the nature of the mind works. And in the same way, if we get into negative mind states, it's sort of like a path that the mind goes on. It'll just go down this track, and the mind will just continually get unwholesome and more unwholesome over time. And this is just like the natural way the mind works. Yeah. And I always like the in the Buddha's text, he talks about the idea of just seeing the growth in one's practice. You know, how can one tell? And he gave the simile of the craftsman's hammer. And you know, when you get a new hammer from the shops, it's a brand new hammer, you know, shiny, and it's smooth, and the craftsman will use it for years and years and years, and he doesn't notice the dings and the scratches and the dents that he puts into his tool, only until one day when he looks at it, maybe years after, he looks at his tool, and his tool is all beaten up, but he remembers. Once is before, many years ago, my tool was new. But now through this time, there's been changes, but I haven't really seen them. So in the same way, with this practice, sometimes we can't see the efforts that we put into this practice on a daily basis. You know, the kindness, sense of appreciation, just being mindful, not worrying. We put this effort in, but we don't see what is happening on a day-to-day basis. But after many years of doing it, say 3, 4, 5, 6 years, we can just look back and say, hey, before I was like a new Buddhist, shiny, no dents. But now I'm an old Buddhist all beaten up and wise. But you know what I mean. You don't understand what changes are happening at this particular time. But from reflection, after many years, you get to see the growth that is happening inside of you. Yeah. And this growth, I think, you just get to a, you know, it's not like getting to a point, but the experiences that you have is just this one of like freedom. Just being able to have like a spaciousness in the mind. You know, just having a mind that is relaxed and doesn't worry too much. And that just comes from just doing these practices of not allowing things to really stick to your mind and not to worry too much. And I think, I do really think that you know, people like Ajahn Brahm, he doesn't worry too much. And I think that's one of the main ingredients for his happiness. Yeah. And I think that's one of a main ingredient for a lot of people's happiness, if you do come across like a happy person. And yeah, just being able to not allow things to really stick onto your mind. That's what we learn as as a meditator, you know. I always like Buddhism for meditation, yeah. And from the meditation, you can just apply that simple concept into your life. Yeah. You know, with meditation, you still like, I don't know, how would you apply, you know, in meditation, you learn how to let go, yeah? So you do the same with your life. You just learn how to let go. And then in meditation, you have to, like, do the meditation. So you have to get your butt on the cushion to do the meditation. And in life, you got to do stuff as well. You got to go to work. You got to make a living. And you do life too. But you do it with a sense of not just allowing things, like doing it with a sense without having a sticky mind. And you can still be effective or productive in life. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I think that's a good attitude, a good way of just going about it. So we're just learning how to chill, learning how to relax. And yeah. And yeah, we just, you know, like some of us, you know, why is, like, you know, like, just like, we know, why are people still Buddhists? Because we understand that this is not our only life. We have many more lives to kind of like to live. Yeah. I mean, that's why you see people, you know, the young and the old, they come here. Because, yeah, they're just continuing on with their practice. And I think, yeah, that's all we can do. Just do our practice and do our best and just see what happens. And just to take a little bit more of a traditional view on like Buddhism, like this idea of karma, and it's kind of like a, yeah, just sort of like a traditional way of looking at life. It's like if you do something bad, you get a bad result. It'll come back to you. Yeah, karma. So be careful what you do. So I think that's one of the things which is quite maybe unique to idea is this idea of like if you make unwholesome karma, it will come back to you. Yeah. So I think as a Buddhist, like if one genuinely wants to practice, I think one lets go of those bad and ill intentions. Because one understands somehow it does come back to you. And we just focus and develop more of like the good karma. Yeah. So it's not like just doing good for the sake of being good. There's more to it. Like you do it and there's like a future result to your actions. So that's why you see when one of the reasons why one of the reasons why the monks and the nuns they just serve in the monastery, like we're just serving, you know, we're just making good karma. We're not getting anything from it. Like Jayako here, he's building a car park. He's not getting paid $600 a day to build a car park. He's just doing it just to make some good karma. And that's like, yeah. And so we're doing it. So that's like the idea of karma, is just to do something without expecting anything in return. And just having that kind of faith, really, because you don't really understand it, that you're going to get some sort of good from it. Yeah. So that's like a lot of the, just being able to bring that idea of like service into one's life, I think is very, very, you know, healthy for one's mind. Put aside your agenda and just serve something in your life. Yeah. And you may not, you know, it's like, why are you doing it? Just to make some merit. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, we just kind of see it in that way as Buddhists. It's like, we're just making merit. Yeah, we're making a bit of good karma. And it's, the funny thing is, you know, when you're living in the monastery and the monks are like, oh, I have to go to work. It's just a way of looking at it. Really, you're actually not going to work. You're actually making some merit, some good karma from it all. And I think it sort of shows. I think it's kind of shows in the in what you see when you look at the monastic setting. I mean, you know, the monks help out the lay people. We come here, we give talks, we teach people how to meditate. And we're just doing it out of our goodwill. We're not charging people money or anything like that. We're just sharing things that we've learned and things from our own experience that may help you, in your life. And we see it as an act of service, an act of making some merit. And as a result of that, we get looked after. Yeah. We get fed. A lot of fried food. That's why I'm so fat. And And as a result, yeah, you can just, sometimes I'm just like astounded from the kindness that the people have shown me through time. And it's a lovely, I think it becomes like a lovely interaction with human beings. Yeah, like I said, like the loveliness, these beautiful interactions, they are always, these things are very, I think, are all helpful to the progress of a spiritual life. And yeah, it's like, you know, these kind people, they come to feed us at Kusala Hermitage, and we're just appreciative of what they're giving us, and we give them back not only, you know, these Dhamma talks, but we give them back like a kindness, like a friendliness, like a warmth, a gentleness towards them. And you, and in that you have this lovely interaction between human beings. And these little things just help you grow on this path. And yeah. And it's always understood, like if you want to have growth, then you have to make the mind healthy. I think I've always said that when I was a little bit younger, you know, being a monastic, your focus is on the meditation, and you know, what kind of mind do you need to be able to progress on the meditation path, to, you know, develop that sense of peace and stillness. And it's always just like one needs to carry a healthy mind into their meditation practice. And that's like, you know, when you look at your lives, it's like, you know, how old, you know, when you grow old, when you want to get to that destination of being old, it's like the way to do it is to carry a healthy mind into old age. Yeah. And you just do it by these simple teachings. There's nothing mind-blowing or mind-blowing or any wow moments or light bulb moments. Like I said to one of the monks the other day, because, you know, we give a few talks and sometimes we think, oh, people might not like our talks, you know. But I told him, it doesn't really matter, because Buddhism is meant to be boring. It may be boring, but it's like, it enriches your life, I think. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah. Like someone made this point earlier, like many, many years ago. If you think about it, it's like in the time of the Buddha, you know, you hear these stories of monks becoming enlightened and all that kind of stuff, you know. And, you know, people would intellectualize and come up with the idea that the Buddha only gave like one or two talks to these people, and they would just go off and they would just practice it and they'll become enlightened. You know, and I was listening to that and I was like, oh, so the practice is more important than listening to Dhamma talks. So that was the interesting thing, the point that he made was, yeah, it's like more of what you do on a daily basis. It's not about, you know, believing in karma is a nice way to think about it, but it's not like believing in karma or, you know, rebirth or trying to figure out life. I mean, some of you have been on this earth for so long, have you figured out what life is? Probably not. So you just live day to day and you live with your own experience and how you feel, like emotionally, and where your head is at on a day-to-day basis. And you can see that, yeah, you know, if your head is in a healthy space is clear, there's not too much trouble, you know, I think then you're doing a good job. Yeah. And if you want to take it further, I think like just focus more on the meditation, just trying to get into that and just see where that takes you. And it's like, you know, I think the history of a lot of monks, one of the reasons why they become a monk is through the meditation practice. And that's, I guess, things that we as monks and also whoever's close to Ajahn Brahm respects his like ability to practice the meditation. And yeah, and just like living with him and just learning the teachings and just living life as a monk for so long, you can start to understand like how special the places the mind can go to just through his example. Yeah. And like I said earlier, just to keep it simple, is I think, yeah, the Buddha just taught life for what it is. He just became enlightened, had a super bright mind, just watching the world, watching people's minds, understanding it, and just teaching it. And I think the one thing that we can get out of it all is, if we want to, we can make the changes in our lives to live a happier life. And that's what he's offering. Eightfold Path. It's like things that you do, the five precepts, small things to do, mindfulness, another thing to do. Yeah. But it's not like, and just after some time, you just ease into your own pace of the practice. Yeah. Sometimes you go on the weekend retreat, try to give yourself a boost. Or monks go on the 2-week retreats or whatever. Yeah. I think that's a lovely thing. Living with Ajahn Brahm is like, he never really forced us to be a certain way. Yeah. Santuti, you have to eat less. Santuti, you have to stop building. It's like, okay, Ajahn, I'll be miserable then. You tell me what to do all the time. Yeah, okay. But yeah, just learn how to go with the flow and things will be a lot easier for yourself. Okay, that's enough. How was my ramblings? Sometimes you ramble because you're talking for a long time, you know? Huh? Refreshing. Okay, very good. Okay. People are heading off. Some people are staying. Okay, the UK is crowning our country's king tomorrow, and wonder what you have to say, Ajahn, about this and the Buddha's view on having hierarchical structures leading us. Ooh. I'm not very political minded, to be honest. Yeah. And I'm saying, like, if you live in China, you live in America, you live in the UK, it doesn't matter who's leading the country. If you really want to, you can still be happy. So that's the point I make. Yeah, it doesn't really matter what they do. They can't control. As Ajahn Brahm said, they can't control your happiness. So yeah, these places you can still practice, you can still sit. So yeah, to me it's not a big deal. I'm not like political minded or get caught up in this stuff. Anyways, okay. Do I have to answer all these questions? There's so many of them. I'll pick the easy ones. How do you overcome ill will? You make peace, you be kind, you be gentle. Yeah, I mean, how do you overcome ill will? I think it's just like, there's so many ways of just looking at it, but just generating enough inner happiness within yourself, generating enough just being solid within, people can't really shake you that much. So yeah, that's how you overcome your will, by just developing a stronger foundation of calm and goodness and those kinds of things. Yeah. I've recently started to meditate daily, but how do you deal with the negative thoughts when you meditate? You don't really deal with them. You just allow them to be. You allow them to be, and what happens is through patience and through peace, you build up this awareness and energy of the mind, and that energy and awareness of the mind helps it doesn't really take away the negative thoughts, but it lessens them, because no one can really have no negative thoughts. From time to time, as humans, we'll have negative thoughts arise within our minds. So what happens through the meditation practice is, one, I think we start to get used to our thinking mind, and two is we don't pay too much attention to the negativity. So in a sense, our mind can be whinging or whatever. We just step back and we don't get too involved in it. And that's just the cycle of the meditation practice. And negative thoughts, sometimes it's just what you expose yourself to, or the conversation that you've had with somebody, or what you read in the newspaper. Those kinds of things can cause negative thoughts. So yeah, that could be, sometimes you have to eliminate something from your life. I think one of the monks that I live with, he has this practice where he stays away from the news for 3 months a year. Because he knows if he reads too much news or reads the wrong news, it may just affect his mind in a negative way. So yeah, monks, you got to see yourself for what affects you and kind of work with it. Yeah. I feel stressful when I try to be mindful. You're trying. That's the problem there, because you're trying. No, I'll get back to it. How to avoid forcing yourself to be mindful and being natural and open in our daily lives? I just think it's just the mindfulness. It's just a reminder that you give yourself from time to time. And yeah, it's kind of strange. Just over time, the mind just develops. It just develops in a way where you're just developing your mind over time. And mindfulness maybe 10 years ago, the way you practiced it, and mindfulness that you do now, it has a different experience and it has a different feeling. Yeah, I think for me, mindfulness when I was starting out was just putting my mind in the present moment. Yeah, if I'm walking through walking in the monastery, my attention just goes into my body. And that's the purpose that I do it for, is to just bring the mind into the body, away from the thoughts. And just doing mindfulness, 10 years later, is you just accumulate things over time. You accumulate the peace that you have developed through your meditation practice. The kindness and the gentleness over time. And then when you do mindfulness, like now, those kinds of feelings accompany bringing your mind back into the present moment. So you have a mindfulness which is softer, more peaceful and more gentle. Yeah. So, if it's stressful, then maybe you're just trying a bit too hard and just being, just back off a little bit and just do it a little bit less, but just continue it. Just try to just add it to your life and just see how that goes. Oh, more questions. Okay, any questions from the floor? Yes, Eddie. I think I'll end soon, eh? Hey. Yeah. Huh? I hit the bullseye. Whoa.
Ajahn Satunti,
yeah.
You hit the bull's eye, you know. You give an excellent talk, you know, on our mind and how our mind affects our well-being, good or bad, you know. Okay, yeah. The Buddha was saying the mind is a forerunner of all states, okay?
Yes.
I'm going to ask you, you know, this thing, is my understanding, you know, of the how the mind works. I'm going to ask you, okay, yeah. If we think good, the feeling is good. If you think negative, the feeling is negative. It goes like, how does it, one like that. It's not say you have a good thought, then you have a good or bad feeling, no.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, so what we have to do is, we have to put in more negative thoughts, you know, to up our positive good feeling, you know.
We have to what?
We have to put in more positive
thoughts, thoughts, yes.
Okay?
Yeah, not
so
negative,
whenever that we have a problem, you have to reflect, because we have the problem is from negative things take over the positive things.
Yeah.
So we have to, sometimes it's you can't see it, you know. So you look at it, we change it, you know. Maybe some negative thing, you hate somebody, there's revenge, you let it go, you know, okay?
Yeah.
And then you put in things like kindness, you know, compassion or a thing to up yourself, and then you up yourself. What do you think, you know? The thinking, my understanding is good thought, good feeling. Bad thought, bad feeling. So you have to, one, you have to keep.
You see what I mean? Yeah, you know, I think we all know that. If we have some sort of stress in our lives, we can feel it in the body. Yeah. Tension in the body or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're more positive or positivity in our mind, the body just feels a little bit more relaxed and at ease. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the normal person, normally, if you don't know how the mind works, you know, so if the negative takes over, then there's stress, anxiety, too much of it, depression comes.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, excellent talk, okay? Okay. I do fully understand what you mean. Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Okay. Let's pay respects to the Buddha and we can go.
Thank you.